I'm Lizzie O'Leary, host of the podcast What Next TBD for Slate. I'm in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Thanks for spending a little time with us today. There was a lot of news on Monday, and a lot of talk from politicians about who has the authority to open up the economy, including our president, who said this during a pretty dramatic press conference.
When somebody's the president of the United States, the authority is total.
Of course, that is not the case. The legislature and judiciary check the president's power. And in this instance, the governors may decide. Yesterday, a number of governors came together to announce that their states will be working together on the next phase of their coronavirus responses.
We just sent out a joint statement of a shared vision for a process and protocol, a framework for reopening.
But reopening with a plan and a smart plan, because if you do it wrong, it can backfire.
Meanwhile, Senator Bernie Sanders had a non-coronavirus update of his own, speaking here to Joe Biden.
So today I am asking all Americans, I'm asking every Democrat, I'm asking every Independent, I'm asking a lot of Republicans to support your candidacy, which I endorse.
But we're going to leave all of that to the side for now and step far away from Washington or any state capital. We'll begin today by looking instead at some of the people keeping the country fed during this health crisis. Farmers and farm workers. The coronavirus outbreak has been incredibly disruptive to the food industry. Under normal circumstances, most of us in the U.S. split our budgets pretty evenly between the food we consume at home and the food we eat when we go out. But that's changing, with stay-at-home orders and restrictions on non-essential businesses. But farms around the country are still producing plenty of product. Only now, there are fewer places to sell it, with restaurants closed or scaled back. And that leaves farmers to figure out how to sell their product to stay afloat, and leaves people around the country who can't get their hands on that food scrambling for solutions. And all of this comes after months of uncertainty for farmers around trade policy. Joe Del Bosque is the president of a roughly 2,000-acre farm in central California, where he grows a number of crops, including melons and asparagus.
Asparagus is something that is eaten a lot in restaurants, and so we're seeing a softness in demand there. And I'm hearing from colleagues over in the other parts of the vegetable sector that are feeling this also. The loss of what they call the food service sector is really impacting the vegetable and fresh produce industry.
And Becca Jablonski also joined us. She is an assistant professor in the Department of Agriculture and Resource Economics at Colorado State University. Becca told me how the food industry is adjusting to our rapidly shifting economy.
Restaurants are pretty much shut down, although some have transitioned to doing online ordering. Schools have been shut down, although some have transitioned to doing emergency food feeding programs, or they're partnering with food banks to do this. So we have closures of some restaurants and other kinds of markets, but at the same time, we see growth in sales in other types of venues. So for example, we've heard from a number of grocery stores that sales were up 30% in March of 2020 compared to March of 2019. So with some colleagues, we put together an economic impact assessment on what we're projecting in losses based on lost sales from farm selling to restaurants, schools, some of the direct markets. So, for example, in some places across the country, we have winter farmers markets that were shut down during the month of March. Of course, many of them are now pivoting and trying to implement social distancing measures. So we estimate that the economic impact is about $1.32 billion from March to May in farm losses. So that wouldn't include any of the that wouldn't include some of other losses. But actually, you know, especially with some of what's coming out, I think that we probably underestimated the total impact because we were not necessarily accounting for some of the major losses that are occurring, not necessarily in places where farms are selling direct to some of these markets.
Well, Joe, have you seen that hit you yet? Have you had to lay off any workers or change the way you work as a result of this change in demand?
Luckily, we're just at the beginning of our season. We actually started harvesting asparagus a few weeks ago, but it's been very slow because of the cool weather. But this week, we're going to crank up more, and we'll see about that. Now, our asparagus is organic, and it's not likely to be impacted as much by the markets in the food service, because restaurants and schools typically don't serve organic asparagus. Most of ours goes directly to retailers. But eventually, you know, the other asparagus, the conventional, if it is feeling an impact from the food service sector, their price could get dragged down and they could pull me down also.
In terms of your workers, what are you doing right now to keep them safe and healthy?
Well, we've implemented a lot of protocols with our workers. You know, in the past, we've had very good food safety protocols that we learned over the years. These include things like a lot of hand washing, don't show up to work when you're sick. If you sneeze in your elbow. What we're implementing now is now things like social distancing, which we didn't do before, because before we were concerned with transmitting pathogens to the consumer through the food. Now we're concerned with transmitting pathogens to each other. And so we're implementing other things, also things like sanitizing. Our supervisors have a bottle of sanitizing solution that they sanitize anything that the employees touch, like bathroom doors and so forth.
If workers take time off for being sick, are they still getting paid?
We do have a sick day program, but they do need to qualify for it. Mm. In other words, if you show up to work today for the first time, you can't get a sick day tomorrow. You have to be in work for a specified period that is in line with the regulations of the state of California. So we haven't lost anybody yet so far, thank God.
Yeah.
Everybody's been healthy and everybody's aware of what's going on. We talk to them and try to keep them informed, because we're learning every day. You know, this is totally new to us, so we're trying to learn as much as we can about the virus and how to prevent our workers from contracting it.
Becca, when we think about this sort of shifting demand and where food is going versus where it's needed, are producers able to pivot and say, sell things direct to consumers? Is that difficult if you already have these sort of set up supply chains between, say, a producer and a school or a restaurant or a wholesaler? How easy is it to be nimble?
So I think for some producers, it's easier than others. And at least from what I'm seeing, you know, I think those small and mid-scale farms are really in a sweet spot, right? That they just are able to pivot in a way much more easily than I think some of the larger scale growers. And if you are already selling direct to consumers, or you had a relationship with some wholesalers, maybe where there was one step in the supply chain before the consumer, we've seen some producers do some really innovative things. So for example, I've heard from a number of the small and mid-scale growers in Colorado that what they're seeing now in terms of sales, so what they usually have in sales over a month, they're able to do in 1 week, you know, assuming that they have the product available.
Joe, when you are thinking about where you're going to sell, do you know that already? Do you have flexibility built into finding new buyers or figuring out where your product can go?
Well, I think there's been a trend in the fresh produce industry of changing the way we market our products. I guess I would be considered a larger producer, even though I don't consider myself that. But the success in the fresh produce industry is to take as much risk out of the market as you can. And what is being done is producers are actually contracting with either wholesale or retail customers. We do the same thing. We want to take out the high fluctuations of the market. So we actually contract with retailers. I'm a big provider for Whole Foods, for instance, and we are planting right now to their orders for July, August, and September. And so that same thing happens in a lot of the produce industry. And so there are a lot of producers that contract with food service for providing, say, chopped lettuces for restaurants or schools or so forth. They have a program for that, and it's not so easy to change that once you've planted for them. And we're planting for a market contract that we got 3 months from now. So it's not easy for us to be as nimble as maybe a smaller farmer.
Would you say you know, donate any of your food to food banks if it got to that point, if you didn't have the kind of buyers lined up that you're expecting?
I think most farmers would say if you have some product and it's already been harvested and packed and you have nowhere to go with it, yes, that is done. And we've done that before in the past. If we have stuff that's in the field and, you know, and there are farmers who are in that situation now that they are not harvesting because they don't have a market for it, it's cheaper to leave it in the field than to pick it and pack it and put all the expense in it to send it off to some place where you'll get nothing back.
I think that image is very hard for people to wrestle with, because the idea of unused food on the one hand, and yet lines, like we've seen lines of cars for food banks. Why is it so hard, Becca, to bridge the gap between producers who have product and people who need food?
So our emergency food system is not equipped to deal with the number of people that we have accessing it currently. So, you know, one of the big bottlenecks has been storage capacity, right? Especially for fresh produce, like Joe's talking about, right? You need to have refrigeration available, places to store that product. And with the quantities they're talking about right now, you know, a lot of times that's really challenging. I've been working with the National Farm to School Network. They run and support many of the farm to school programs across the country. And we talked to them about how the school was adapting to provide these meals to children. I mean, many of the kids in our country are dependent on these school meals. And what we heard is that as they're transitioning to these different types of emergency food programs, they're really shifting away from providing fresh or perishable product and towards non-perishable items. And that makes it more challenging to connect producers directly to those types of networks and feeding systems.
Joe, do you worry about the long-term impact for your own operation and for other growers around you in California as this drags on?
Yes, we're thinking of what the future holds for us. The fresh fruit and vegetable industry is probably most impacted because we don't have as much flexibility as, say, the non-perishable foods. You know, if I grew beans or rice, you could just hold it in a silo, right? But you can't hold my melons very long. We can hold them in the cold room for a few days or maybe even a week, but eventually that cold room gets full and you have to make room for the new fruit coming in. This would be very difficult for us if this continues much longer.
Joe Del Bosque is the president of Del Bosque Farms in Central California, and Becca Jablonski is an assistant professor at Colorado State University. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.